Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. This is one of your hosts, Dr. Karen Lewis. I'm a practicing veterinarian in the St. Louis, Missouri area, actually the Illinois side, but we won't delve into that. And my fabulous co-host is Dr. Roger Welton, who's snickering at me right now. And today we are going to talk about, we're going to expand on a blog article I wrote called Does Your Indoor Only Cat Can your indoor only cat skip all vaccines? Because I have a lot of people who say, hey, my cat never goes outside. Do I really need these shots? So Dr. Roger and I were having a really good talk about that before we started, and I think we've got a lot to share. So Dr. Roger, why don't we start with what you recommend for your cats, and then we can kind of expand on that.
Well, I of course opine that I really believe that, to me, the vaccines are important. And obviously, we have to say by law, I don't know what it is in Illinois/Missouri, by state law, they have to have the rabies, right? They have to have
all 50 states, actually.
All 50 states? Okay. Yep. You never know. There's always that one that you never know. But so by law, we have to stipulate as veterinarians, you have to have rabies prophylaxis. But there's also the notion that cats do escape. I have three that do escape occasionally. They get outside. I have two little children that let them out. Right now I have, are you familiar with the bird cage or AKA lanai that we have, the structure we have here in Florida?
No.
Never heard of that?
No.
Okay.
Is that like the Florida thing where you brag about your nice weather again?
Oh, no, yeah. Well, no. I'm not trying to go there, but you know, if you have an inferiority complex, I get it. But okay. So we have a pool in the back, and the weather here is so organic, and there's so much organic stuff and so many bugs and lizards and frogs and all kinds of nasty stuff that you don't want a pool open to the environment. So what they do is construct these big bird cage like structures around your pool and your porch. And they're like 20 feet in the air, and they're all screened in, and it's called, you could call it a lanai or a bird cage. So anyway, right now, currently my lanai has two screens that are blown out, which my cats, conceivably, if one of my kids let them out there, we're going to get them fixed, but doesn't happen as quickly as we'd like it to here in Florida because the screens decay and it's not easy to get somebody in here to fix them, and I sure as heck can't do it. So if one of my cats jumps out, you know, you never know. They come across an opossum. They come across an animal that does carry some of these viruses. Feral cats are huge here in Florida. Is that a problem with you guys as well?
It depends on the neighborhood, but there's a lot of neighborhoods where they say, yeah, and people feed them, and I can't blame them, and it grows.
Yeah, so feral cats are abundant here, so they could come across a feral cat, and there you go, species, you know, cross infection. So I opine that, yes, you should do the bare minimum as far as state law is concerned and as far as the AHA, American Animal Hospital Association, recommend, but I would not be doing feline leukemia. You know, I would go through the kitten series just so there's some immunity on board in the life of the cat in case they escape. But realistically, an indoor cat is not at risk for a retroviral disease. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, and actually that's exactly what the AAFP recommends. And what the AAFP is, like, who are they and why do we care? It's a group called it's the American Association of Feline Practitioners. And they're kind of the gods of cat medicine, if you will. They're the ones who really study cat medicine. They publish a lot of really good studies, and they come up with really good recommendations. And you would think, okay, if all these veterinarians, you know, veterinarians are all about making money and to push a lot of shots, so this AAFP is going to recommend giving your cat all these shots, right? And actually, no. It's funny. There's actually one shot that they say never, ever to give, which I don't know what vaccine manufacturer makes that one, but ouch. So they actually recommend exactly what Dr. Roger was saying about, yeah, do the leukemia series on a kitten, because let's face it, a kitten, we're still kind of getting to know their personality. Are they going to be the cat who, you know, tears open the screen and runs out every chance they get? Or are they going to be the cat who, you know, hides under the couch every time the doorbell rings? We don't know that yet. But when your cat is an adult and they're never going outside, obviously, yeah, we say no need for leukemia. A lot of veterinarians these days are saying that, as is the AAFP. Reason being, because you get leukemia through very intimate contact. It doesn't fly through the air. It's not in the water. Two cats have to groom each other, lick each other, share saliva, pretty much make out. So, you know, it's not a cat-contact kind of thing. So, yeah. You know, if there's a stray cat you see out your window, your indoor cat is not going to get leukemia. But the other shot that is recommended by AAFP for all cats is the FVRCP. And that is the feline distemper, we call it. And I'll let Dr. Roger talk about what FVRCP stands for and actually what it protects against.
So do you use the one with chlamydia or without chlamydia?
A chlamydia was not recommended for right. all cats. So I do not.
Right. So I'm with you and I'm with them. So appreciate but there's people doing that. I don't do that. You know, so we're talking about panleukopenia virus, right? It's a parvovirus, actually. Why do we call it feline distemper?
I don't know. It's so stupid because the disease they call distemper is actually like feline parvo. Yeah, call it parvo. Feline parvo.
Yeah.
No, and it's actually, I think it sounds scarier if you call it feline parvo. You know, parvo strikes the fear in the heart of me much more than distemper does.
Totally. And actually, I had a client not too long ago actually ask me if I was going to give that distemperment vaccine because I got my cat's one ornery son of a bitch.
Yes, so, I love that.
Yeah.
What make my cat
distemperment?
Nice. If we come up with that, we'll be millionaires. You realize, but yes.
So yeah, parvovirus. It basically destroys your GI. It also suppresses your bone marrow. So your bone marrow is what makes your red and white blood cells. And of course, if that is defunct, then it's a double whammo. You have a horrible infection in your gut, and you can't mount an immune response to fight it because your white blood cells aren't being made. Because your bone marrow is suppressed, and also you become horribly anemic. And when I say you, I'm describing you as a cat. I believe there is human parvovirus, isn't there?
I honestly don't know.
I don't know either. There's got to be, right?
Maybe in some third world country, like in the water somewhere, but yeah. I've never really heard about it. It sounds, I don't know. If there's a vaccine for it in people and cats, you'd think they'd have a vaccine for people if there were.
I would think so.
But speaking of the vaccine, that reminds me, a client, as a veterinarian who told me back in the 70s when parvovirus first in dogs was coming out, it was like this horrible mystery disease and dogs were dying right and left and he was getting emotional telling me this story. And then he was like, and then they came out with a vaccine and dogs stopped dying. I mean, it was amazing. So, I mean, these vaccines actually save lives.
Oh, they do. And I think it was 1982. I may be off, folks. I'm sure you're going to Google it, but I think it was 1982 parvo vaccine came out. And distemper in dogs used to take out whole towns and cities of dogs. You know, like distemper. God, I've seen two cases in my whole career, you know. But we're talking about cats. Let's get back to cats.
Yeah, sorry.
So panleukopenia virus, rhinotracheitis. So that is a herpes virus, right? And as we know, do you like Eddie Murphy? I think he's hilarious.
Oh, yes.
As he very eloquently put it, herpes is like luggage. Once you get it, you can't get rid of it. you keep it forever like luggage. So it's true in every form, right? So did you have chicken pox as a kid?
Oh, yeah. And I tell people that when you get shingles later, it's the same thing. Because when you say herpes, people think their cat's like morally challenged. And it's like, right. No, it's not that kind of herpes.
Right.
Think chicken pox herpes. Right. It's a lot morally
clean. That's why I always go to chicken pox.
Yes.
Right? Or canker sores. That's herpes too, right? Yeah. But no, I exactly. You hear herpes. But in cats, it's upper respiratory. It's trachea. It's conjunctiva, the eyes. Sometimes it causes ulcers of the corneas, nasal stuff. Can be particularly nasty. Have you seen some cases that are like horrific? I see about one a year that are really bad. How about your? What's your experience with that?
Yeah, I see. It's usually these poor little tiny kittens that people find, and their eyes are matted shut, and their nose is boogered shut, and they're this upper respiratory. It's a kitty cat head cold from hell is what I tell people. Yeah. And I've had cats that when they're that tiny, their immune system can't handle it. They can't breathe. They can't eat. So, yeah, it sucks. So you definitely don't want to be having your cat go through getting that sick.
And if they're older cats that have a naive immune system to it, and most cats have been exposed to it, you know, in their lives, either through a vaccine or through exposure from wherever they came from. But you get those naive immune system cats. I had one actually 6 months ago that got so congested. He had a fever of 105, male cat. Actually, I had to put a feeding tube in because he got fatty liver syndrome because he was so congested he wouldn't eat. So it's not anything to take lightly. You know, it's a head cold from hell, like you said. It's something that, you know, cats are so tough. You know, they might be sneezing and have runny eyes, but if it was us, we'd probably be in bed, not moving, and eating chicken soup and swallowing ibuprofen like it's going out of style.
And complaining the whole time, yes.
What's that?
And complaining the whole time, yes.
And complain, especially if you're a guy.
Yes.
You know, us men don't like to be sick, as you well know. And then thirdly, Khaleesi virus. Why don't you expand on Khaleesi virus? I've been talking a lot.
Oh yeah. So Khaleesi, it's kind of funny. So Khaleesi's been around for a while. It's a virus that also causes the, you know, kitty cat head cold kind of thing. But I'm not sure on the year. I want to say maybe it was 2010, give or take a couple of years. A new Khaleesi virus came out, and it was, if you went to a veterinary conference, they were filling lecture halls about the new Khaleesi virus and how to not have to shut down your clinic for 2 weeks. Do you remember that? Yes. And,
absolutely.
And like standing, let me tell you, if you want to fill a room full of veterinarians, tell them that there's a new virus coming out and it's going to kill their patients, and they are in there. Okay. It was like standing room only. It was 100 degrees in this room, and we sweated it out. So anyway, and it was this feline practitioner telling us there's this new Khaleesi virus that causes just really, really bad ulcers on their tongue and their throat, and it's always fatal. And we were like, whoa, and it's super contagious. You know, if you get this in your hospital, shut it down. And, you know, obviously it's not that bad.
Right.
But
right.
It is bad. I've actually worked in animal shelters where we've had Khaleesi go through, and it's no picnic, and a lot of cats die from it. So the Khaleesi virus in the vaccine often protects against that new one. Now, back in the day when this first came out, there was a big race to see who could make the first vaccine for it, you know, because we're all going to save lives. And now it's pretty much in everyone. And now we realize that actually that big, bad, scary Khaleesi virus isn't really that, you know, it's not sweeping the nation. It's not the next cat zombie apocalypse. So we all kind of sort yeah. down from that now. But yeah, but it was scary for a while. So, but yeah, Khaleesi is just another, you know, kitty cat head cold thing that you don't want your cat to get.
Sure. So, now, what about the gingival form of it? The chronic gingival form. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't personally seen it. Thank God. Yeah. No.
Well, you know, the thing about that, it's hard to prove, right? So you get a cat with, you know, ulcerated gums, and, you know, stomatitis cases, we call it lymphocytic plasmacytic stomatitis. So basically the immune system is attacking the gums of the cat. And honestly, some of these cases, you treat them with steroids and antibiotics, but some of them you have to actually pull all their teeth. I don't know if you ever had to do that.
Oh, actually, one of my own technicians, her personal cat just had all of its teeth pulled out. And it's awful. Again, we can't prove it's Khaleesi. You know, we don't know if it's autoimmune or what. But right. I see quite a few of these cats where, like you said, their immune system just attacks their teeth. The teeth are the enemy, and it's a brutal life. But, I mean, thank God, now that a cat has no teeth, he actually is doing really good. But
oh, yeah, they do great. It's amazing. They don't miss their teeth, and the gums heal up. So, like, something about the enamel is playing a role there. But it's so ambiguous. Cats are like, they're such mysterious diagnostic medicine creatures. I just find they don't follow the rules. They don't read the textbook, so to speak, right? Physiologically.
No. Well, and in vet school, it sucks that you don't learn as much about cats as you do dogs. Right. I mean, let's face it. We go learn about dogs, and there's the asterisk.
Right.
And then, by the way, cats do this in small print at the bottom. So, right. and then in fourth year of vet school, they yell at you because they're like, cats are not small dogs. Well, right. For the first 3 years, you kind of told us they were. And that is what they are. So, thick as furry.
How very, very, very appropriate. Oh, my God, is that true? I mean, what was your cadaver your first year? Wasn't it a dog?
Yep, and there was one cat that the whole class of 100 class had to share.
You know what? Yes. That's amazing. Every vet school is the same. You got this intimate relationship with your dog cadaver. You know every freckle on this dog, and then there's
we
one
named
cat.
It. He was Skippy. Yes.
There you go. One cat, though, that the whole class shares.
Yes. In your spare time. Yes.
So. Precisely. So, I mean, so very appropriate statement. As far as that's concerned, the link with Khaleesi and the gums, and there's also a link to that weird bacteria, Bartonella felis, you know, which may be a secondary opportunistic because of Khaleesi. It's so convoluted.
And it's hard to prove, like you said.
It's hard to prove, yeah. So, but let's just say it may be another good reason to vaccinate for Khaleesi.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd leave it at that, definitely.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say, okay, so I've got my cat who seriously gets off the couch to eat and use rocks, and then he goes back to his, you know, they're like, this cat never has interest in going outside. If I beg him to go outside, he won't. Do I really need to vaccinate this cat?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? If your cat is in a closed, what I call a closed system, and what that is there's no other cats going in or out. If you're thinking about getting a kitten, yes, vaccinate your cat. Okay, because that's not a closed system anymore. If you are one of those really cool people who volunteers at a shelter and works with cats, then I high-five you through the computer, and I say you need to vaccinate your cat because you can bring home diseases on your clothes. Or if you just have stray cats that you spend time with feeding, again, you're an awesome person, but those cats carry diseases, and your clothes absolutely positively can, not leukemia, but the other respiratory infections, they can carry it in. However, if you have no cats in your life at all, if you're a one cat person, or, you know, if you have three cats and they all stay inside, it doesn't need to be just one cat, then I have owners who say, you know what, I don't want to do the December vaccine. And I say, you know what, that's cool with me. You know, I would much rather do an annual physical exam and blood work and other things like that than I would give it some stupid shot that doesn't need. Now, rabies, different story. You know, and not because your indoor-only cat is going to get rabies, because he's not. It's just because you need the stupid paper trail, because all it takes is some jerk to come over trying to sell you something. He says your cat bites him. Your cat never even saw him. And if your cat's not current on rabies, your life just got way unfun. So all 50 states now recognize a 3-year rabies vaccine. It used to be a couple of them only recognized a 1-year, and they were kind of in the boondocks, and we laughed at them. Now they're all at the 3-year. And so I say, just do it every 3 years, keep your cat legal, save yourself the headache.
And it's not just somebody visiting your house. They may need to go to the veterinarian because they have a urinary tract infection, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how often do you get bit by a cat?
I have excellent technicians. I haven't been bit by a cat in probably 7 years.
How about scratched?
Oh, well, dude, okay. Yeah, I have had a couple of those.
All right. So a bite or a scratch, at least in the state of Florida, is considered penetration. And by law, I have to report that to animal control. And if animal control determines that stated cat that created tissue puncture, either by nail or by teeth, that cat has to be quarantined for 10 days at the owner's expense. The owner gets fined $150 for not having their rabies prophylaxis on board. So it's a pain in the butt and it's expensive. I just as soon avoid it, you know, like you said, every 3 years, who cares?
Yeah, it's not a bad deal.
Yeah, no, totally. But so let's talk about, you really segued into something really cool there, which is I want to get my hands on your cat once a year. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's for me, you know, I'm not a big vaccine guy. You know, I'm actually more trying to minimize the number of vaccines that I'm going to give your dog or cat, because I want to make them lifestyle specific and do what's necessary, but I don't want to overdo it. It is a stress on the immune system. It's something that we should only do when we need to. I think you agree with me on that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because we were just talking before how I was telling my husband, I'm a horrible businesswoman I'm talking people out of vaccines, you know, because we've been trained and it's been beaten into pet owners, go in for your shots every year, shot, shot, shots. That's what it's all about. And I'm like, no, I care more about looking at your cat's mouth, weighing it. Has it lost half of a pound?
Sure.
You know, how does his skin look? How do his teeth look? You know, that's much more important than some stupid shot that your indoor cat probably doesn't even need. So absolutely. And honestly, Dr. Roger, you said every year. I think even for senior cats, even twice a year,
agreed,
to be really honest with you.
I agree. That's not an easy selling point. But, you know, you and I were kind of debating before we started the show. It's 1 year of a cat's life is depending on the life stage, right? Because those juvenile cats age way faster than a human would. But let's say on average, 1 year of a cat's life is like 5-ish years of our life-ish. Mm-hmm. Right, give or take.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think about the 10-year-old cat is probably equal to about a 50-year-old person,
right,
you know, for easy math. So,
well, I will tell you that in veterinary school, between graduating undergraduate and going to veterinary school, and then the aftermath of that, getting my first job and all that, it was about a 5-year period. I didn't go to the dentist. 5 years.
Neither did I. It's okay.
Okay. A lot of us didn't go to the dentist during that time.
We couldn't afford to.
Couldn't afford to. Didn't think about it, right? Yeah. Didn't have halitosis. Nobody was saying, man, you stink. Or at least they weren't telling me. I go to the dentist. Good Lord, it cost me a lot of money. And all this stuff is going on. They had to, like, numb my whole mouth because they needed to do, like, deep root scrapings and all this stuff. And horrible. Never do that again.
You needed to floss, dude. But anyway, we'll go on.
I did floss. That's a thing, you know. Apparently, I drank too much coffee. Whatever the case.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So 5 years of my life went by. Nobody looked at my teeth. And look at the aftermath, right? So periodontal disease, horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible problem in veterinary medicine. And it's so undervalued in among pet owners, and that's one thing we want to look at, teeth. But one of the things I brought up before we started the show today was poop. Now, you brought up not as much as an issue where you are,
right?
But indoor cats. So let me just, before I get into this, I just want to tell you about, I so devalue vaccines in terms of like a revenue stream for me and what I'm really focused on. Are they important? Yes, I agree with you, Dr. Karen. Very important for the things that they're really at risk for. Am I going to stress over a shot that a cat probably doesn't need? No, I'm not going to stress over that. So I actually give them to you for free. Talk about a bad business plan.
Yeah.
I give them to you for free. All I'm going to ask you to do, if you're a feline owner, you're going to pay for an examination and you're going to pay for a stool analysis. If you do those two things, whatever your cat's due for is free. So it actually costs me more money, right, from a business standpoint, to give your cat more vaccines than to give your cat less. So I'm not going to be pushing things your cat doesn't need, but obviously I'm trying to prove that that's monetary is not my motivation. It's good medicine, but my main thing is it's a well visit. Like you said, examine, check weight, check teeth, look in the ears. Cats are so stoic. They're way tougher than dogs. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. And they can hide. I swear, if you have a cat who's, I mean, their legs hanging on by a thread and they're sitting looking at you like, what? And it's just like, don't touch it, please. But what? Yeah. They hide pain. It's amazing.
Incredible. I look at some of the the feline odontoclastic resorptive lesions, the AKA foral lesions. What makes cats a little bit unique from people is that they get, you know, we get tartar, you scrape it off, you get some gingivitis, maybe you get some root disease if you let it go too long. But cats actually activate a cell called an odontoclast that starts to degradate the neck of the tooth, and it's actually horrifically painful. Have you ever, you know, obviously?
Oh yeah. And I mean, and those, imagine your tooth being basically eaten away, and you can usually tell by looking because the tooth will have a little bit of a dent in it. But if you confirm it, touch that tooth.
Oh.
Because the cat will be like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
And it only takes one touch. You're not being kinky here trying to torture your cat, but that way we can say, okay, you know, we're going to definitely do a dental on your cat and we need to fix this because I am surprised your cat's even eating. But, well, if they don't eat, they'll die. Because everybody says, oh, but he's eating. What do you mean? Well, what choice does he have?
Right.
You know.
What choice does he have? But also, they're so much tougher because have you ever had a toothache?
Thankfully, no.
No?
Actually, I know.
I've had a couple. And
oh, I hear it's awful.
Awful. Makes, I mean, just you feel it in your ear and you're behind your eye, you know,
like, oh god.
My brother who's much bigger, big tough guy, much bigger than me, apparently a toothache, and he's really cheap, by the way, he doesn't like spend much money, a toothache drove him to spend $2,000 to get an emergency dentist to just get this tooth out of his mouth.
Oh my god.
He was so miserable. You know, he could have waited till Monday and spent $800, but he's like, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to die.
Oh, wow.
Right? To have his molar extracted, he just had to get it out of his mouth. And it was less painful after he had it actually pulled than before the pulling, you know? So
oh, yeah.
it can't be overstated how bad a tooth can hurt. So that's one thing we want to look at, but you know, like you said, you look at the whole patient. How often do you see a cat, right? And, wow, your cat has dropped 5 pounds in the last year.
Yeah, and they always say, but he's eating really well.
Uh-huh.
I'm like,
So what does your radar tell you when that happens?
Yeah, so that's when I burst into my hyperthyroid song and dance, where I explain, it's showy. But basically, I explain to people that, you know, cats have, as they age, some cats can develop an overactive thyroid, which I kind of joke is the disease of my dreams, because they can eat everything they want and still lose weight. So, but in your cat, it's not a good thing. It's associated with them, you know, blood clots, heart disease, you know, kidney disease. It's not something cool. The nice thing about it is it's really easy to diagnose. Uh-huh. You do a blood test. Like, there's so many diseases that are so hard to diagnose where we do blood tests and x-rays and MRIs and they all come back normal and we're still sitting there going, No, thyroid disease in old cats, super easy. You do blood work, the thyroid comes by, you treat it. It's easily treatable. So it's one of my favorite diseases in old cats because people are like,
I love it.
Put Fluffy down. And I'm like, no, Fluffy's treatable. Then the husband's always like, dang. And the wife's, and the wife's thrilled.
The cat looks skeletal, right? They've lost all their lean muscle around their face. They look like this.
They look awful.
Awful yeah. creature, yet they're stealing pancakes from breakfast off their, off their owner's plates. And suddenly you treat them and the face fills out. The coat looks great. And they're like, I have my cat back. This is amazing. And he's no longer stealing my pancakes. This is really cool. But differing from, you know, a little bit your experience in Illinois, is the stool sample here in Florida is really important. I would say probably not just Florida. I'm guessing, you know, Southeast, where
any warm place, probably
where things don't die, like you said.
Yeah.
Things don't freeze and die, right? So I diagnose positives all the time. Indoor cats and people, I mean, before I was giving away vaccines to get people to do a stool analysis with an indoor cat, they just wanted the shots. They just wanted it to be legal. There's a lot of condominiums here in Florida. Mm-hmm. So their condo associations actually make them provide the paperwork that they've had the shots. So, you know, that's a nice way to get compliance. But could not get these people to do a stool sample or a stool analysis, you know, for the life of me, could not get them to do it. Well, now that they're getting free vaccines, it actually works out way cheaper if you give me your stool, or I'm sorry, your cat stool to analyze it than to pay for the vaccines. It's way cheaper. They give me their cat stool and I find positives all the freaking time. All the time. I just had one today. Want to know what it was?
I'm going to guess Giardia.
It was. Wow. Huh. How about that?
This was not planned, by the way.
No, it wasn't, actually. Not even remotely. So tell us about Giardia.
So Giardia, well, see, I had the odds in my favor when I guess, because it's probably the most common parasite we see in indoor only cats. So I work the odds here. But Giardia, we see a lot. Now, full disclosure, depending on who you read, 10 to 20% of cats normally have Giardia living in their intestines. So some of these cats, you do a fecal, the cat's not having diarrhea, they're not skinny, they're doing fine. You know, depending on the stage of the Giardia that we see, we're like, meh, okay, this is apparently your cat is, this is his friend. He can keep his friend. But in a lot of other cats, actually, Giardia can cause symptoms. What it is when you say intestinal parasite, a lot of people think worms, which is true. That's a lot of them. But Giardia is actually a little microscopic, like amoeba kind of little cell that has a little tail on it. And it it can cause disease in people too, usually when like the water treatment plant fails or something like that. But it causes diarrhea in cats when it's pathogenic and not their friend, I should say. So it's definitely nothing to sneeze at. And it's definitely something that you would want to try treating, again, depending on the stage of the Giardia that you see in the fecal sample. And if it's the stage that's infective, it actually could even infect other people in the house, other cats, the dog, the kid. So whoever cleans out the litter box could be at risk too. So it's definitely something you want to know. And the only way you'll know is doing a fecal sample.
You summed it up very nicely. And in this particular cat, I asked him, is there any stool problems? Because it wasn't a Giardia, you know, where you actually see the cysts.
Mm-hmm.
It was an antigen positive. So if it's antigen positive, I go with like, you know what? It might be just part of the flora of the intestine like you had noted. But this particular cat had stool the consistency of soft serve ice cream.
Ooh, that's never good.
Would you say that's normal?
No.
All right, it's probably a good idea to treat. Probably the cause for the soft serve ice cream stool. Can't wait to go out for ice cream, I'm sure, after this, right?
We just ruined that for you, sorry.
Yeah. Well, especially the chocolate variety.
Oh, okay. But the thing is, and the thing about cat poop is, hello, you're cleaning the litter box. So most people are kind of aware what the cat poop looks like, to
right.
an extent, you know?
Right.
So some people, and you're cleaning and you're interacting with it, and so you're kind of at risk there too if you don't wash your hands real well after cleaning it or something. So especially when it's real soupy, like you were saying, like the soft serve ice cream, you know, come on, we've all kind of done the scrape off the edge of the side with the scooper, you know.
Yeah, it happens. Every now and then they, you know, their gut isn't right and it happens. But in this cat's case, you know, perhaps, I don't know. Maybe the Giardia was opportunistic. We don't know. But yeah, it's worth treating to find out, right? For the health of the kitty cat. And then, of course, there's this weird parasite here in Florida. And I'm sure they see this in, like, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, other places where these little geckos run all over the place. They do come in the house, and my cats go out on that lanai that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And they get in the lanai, and they hunt the lizards sometimes. And they can get this parasite called Spirometra, which is a big, ugly... All right, can you see my fingers here? I'm kind of getting the screen that you can see. not working, but yeah. It's about 12 inches long. It's ugly as heck, and it's not going to kill your cat, but over time, it causes ill thrift.
What is ill thrift exactly? Okay. Ill thrift is kind of a victor. Basically, what it means is it's a cat who just looks like he's homeless, for lack of a better term. You know, like their coat's all greasy and nasty, and they're all skinny, and you know, you're like, dude, you look rough.
Right.
So, kind of like the hyperthyroid cats I was talking about earlier.
Right.
That's described as a non-thrifty hair coat.
Sure.
So, yeah, but ill thrift, that's what ill thrift is, and that, which was what Spirometra obviously causes.
So, that's why I left it to you to describe, because, because my, I just have that sort of straightforward brain where I'm like, ill thrift, and people are probably like, okay, what the hell is that?
And I'm like, ye be nasty.
That's why I wanted you to expand on the point. I'm like, tell us about ill thrift. You're always going to give me a really nice analogy. I love it. Very good. So I mean, I saw one of the reasons that I focus so much on the stool and the examination is I actually saw a lecture at the North American Veterinary Conference. It was called The Power of Poop. It was the name of the lecture.
Did that fill the room like the Khaleesi virus lecture did?
It filled it pretty well, yeah.
Interesting.
Luckily, I got there early. Not on purpose. I just happened to be like, wow, that looks interesting.
Oh, you were there first in row. You know how you are.
Well, it was by luck. Didn't plan it, but it was one of the best lectures I ever sat through because they sat there and went through these statistics. I'm like, holy cow. You know what? I got to do more poop. You know, got to look at more poop. See any of the weird things in cat's poop?
Well, actually, you know, what I think would be worth mentioning too, is there's a couple different ways to test poop. There's the old way, which was fecal flotation. And I know we started with vaccines and now we delved into poop. It's all part of the whole annual visit thing, but, fecal flotation, it's the older version where basically you have a solution that is a very specific osmolality. And basically that means the little molecules in the solution are big enough to kind of push the eggs up to the surface. But long story short, they realized that there was a better way to actually test the poop. And so most vet clinics nowadays are doing the new way, which is called fecal centrifugation. It's a lot more labor intensive. You actually put the poop in a centrifuge with a very special solution, spin it down to separate all the different layers, and then you read and look for microscopic eggs. But they found that these are, again, depending on who you read, 30 to 60% more sensitive in terms of picking up things that were being missed on the flotation. So if you want to become a true poop enthusiast, you can even ask your vet, hey, which one are you doing, flotation or centrifugation? And if they say centrifugation, high five them, because that's the best, most current way to do it. And honestly, now most vets even send it to the lab because we just don't have time to be centrifuging poop after poop after poop all day. At least I don't. So the labs do a fantastic job of doing it.
Yeah.
And they pick up on all the stuff and send this report, and it's good. So I use a lab. Do you use a lab, Dr. Roger?
Absolutely. You know, okay. And it's not just because we don't have freaking time for it, because, you know, I didn't tell you much about my week, but, you know, yesterday I removed a squeaky toy from a pit bull's intestine. Squeaky. It was like a perfectly shaped duck just stuck right in his jejunum. It's beautiful.
Oh, it's always so fun.
Poor boy was really sick, but he's fine. He's going home tomorrow. But bottom line is that there's so much going on. The last thing I need my certified veterinary technicians to be doing is centrifuging poop, right? So I just send them off. The other thing, too, is my technicians are doing dentistry, scrubbing and surgery, doing all these things, and they're not experts in poop. I, you know, and they may get mad at me for saying this because they are very, very good. But there's technicians at like Antec, let's say, that's a big reference lab. All they do 24/7 is read duty slides.
But I will say that when the centrifugation first became popular and Antec started doing a lot of these, there was a debate. No one wanted to be called, you know, what do you call yourselves? The poop technologist. So no, the official term, I think, it is kind of weak downplay, but they are called, it's parasite technologist or something, which does sound a lot more classy and a lot more interesting. Cause I gotta say, I mean, any weird, obscure parasite, like some days I've gotten some reports from Antec where I'm like, what is that parasite? Oh crap. I have to go look it up now because I haven't seen it in 10 years, you know, and they can, boom, they can spot on do it. So they're very, very good at what they do.
Yeah, no, it, that's a really good point. It's like, kudos to these people. They're experts in the field of detecting parasites in the stool. I mean, yeah, they work in poop all day, but hey, it's a very important diagnostic purpose. So it helps us do what we do, which is make them better, you know? That's the goal in the end, isn't it?
Yep. And not to make money in the process, which is why you give away your vaccines. So, yep, exactly.
Right. Yes. Well, as it turns out that, you know, and not, I don't want to give up my secrets to other veterinarians, but as it turns out, poop is more profitable than vaccines. when you're actually doing the AHA guidelines and you're doing them with the reformed way, not giving the distemper every year, you know, do you ever hear the term shot wagon?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so we have them here in Florida. We call them shot wagons. They actually pull up to gas stations, or they pull up to like the local pharmacy. I'm not going to say names because I don't want to get sued, but even like big chain pharmacies, like it's really sad that they hire these people, but they show up, they open their little canopy in the back, and they just do shots all day. They don't even examine the patient.
Oh, it's like those low-cost vaccine clinics where it's just boom, poke, poke, poke.
Poke. And they will vaccinate for everything, and they will vaccinate for everything every year, all the time, no matter what. They don't even ask the lifestyle, nothing. Plug. So, you know, obviously that's not what we want to do as good veterinarians. We want to do good medicine. So when you factor in the patients that may not be getting all of these vaccines, and if you're doing them like the FVRCP every 3 years, it's actually more profitable to give away the vaccines and do a stool and an exam, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it's better medicine, you know. And I had a great mentor say to me once, good medicine can be profitable and you can profit from good medicine. And that's okay.
Yeah, because there's so many vets that are afraid. They're like, oh, I have to do shots every year. Otherwise, I don't know how I'll stay in business. I'm like, I've been in business for 4 years now talking people out of shots.
Right.
We're fine, right. You know. So, yeah, and it's hard, too. And I think the older generations who, I mean, when you've been told the same thing for 30 years of get your pet vaccinated every year, it's hard. Anything's hard to change, you know. And so a lot of the older vets are very resistant to it. And a lot of the older clients, it kind of rocks their world when I tell them, hey, we can do this every 3 years. And here's a secret. It's usually the same shot. They put a different label on the 3-year one and charge me more. Seriously.
isn't that such an insightful comment and so true. So absolutely true. And by the way, we talk about the old vets. We're not there yet. I don't know exactly how old you are. I'm 41 years old.
I'm pushing 40 hard and I'm a little bothered by that. So. Okay.
Well, so we're 40-ish people. You're not there yet. I don't want to prematurely age you, but it's funny because we talk about the old vets and like I'm maybe like a decade away from being considered one of those guys. And then there's going to be, you know, somebody like your age or my age saying those old guys. And the important thing is when we say old vets, I want to stipulate that if you're an old vet, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're stuck in your ways.
No, it's the old vets who haven't stayed modern. Because I have one of my very good friend graduated from vet school in 1984. She would be an old vet, quote, but she's actually one of the most modern vets I know.
Yeah, I graduated fifth grade that year.
Yeah,
no,
I know.
Fourth grade. No, I graduated fifth grade in 1985. Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
So she's, it's a lot of the, the old vets who chose not to stay current, and mm-hmm. you know, and that's fine. That's their choice. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that it's, again, they've been doing something for 30 years too. Old habits die hard. And it was funny because there's a couple things that I haven't had a vet school long enough now that some of the stuff I learned in vet school, they're now saying is being disproven. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, but I learned that in vet school. So I'm like, oh no, this is how I become an old vet. Right. See, because I'm like, no, no, that's not true. Yeah. So I'm actually feeling what it's like. But yeah, so I mean, no, it's just, I should say it's an old mentality of vaccinating every year.
Yeah.
Because every study has shown that you don't really need to when there's 3-year shots available, if there's a 3-year shot available.
Very, very good point. And great article, by the way. But this was inspired by Dr. Karen's article at her blog, vetchick.com. If anybody has not read it, I would absolutely recommend reading Dr. Karen's blog. It's a lot of fun. It's great information. And I really enjoy having you as my co-host. It was a great talk tonight.
Yeah, thanks. I had a good time. Oh, I also wanted to say real quick, I added a second blog article to the first one. I have the one that says, you know, can your indoor cat skip all vaccines? And I have another one about what vaccines does your cat really need? And I kind of go vaccine by vaccine. So you can kind of shop through them and kind of understand what each one is and why they're probably not neutered, you know, and it's not just, you know, crazy Dr. Karen. I'm going by the AAFP guidelines, so it's not like I just concocted this. But if you want more detail, it's on there too.
I'm sure it's fun, entertaining reading, and also great information, since especially because you're not an old vet yet.
So, yes.
So that's a good thing. So thank you very much once again for another great show. I don't know what we're going to talk about next time.
Yeah, we'll have to decide. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Hey,
so maybe we can just do, you know, emails people send into us. Maybe we can get some fun suggestions there too.
That's a heck of an idea. So anybody listening, send us emails, give us suggestions on a show topic, and then Dr. Karen and I could brainstorm on what sounds the most fun. What do you think?
Yeah. I think we make everything fun.
We do. We make cat vaccines fun.
Come
I mean,
on.
You we can't get more dry than that.
Come At on. Least,
wait, wait. Maybe it's just fun for us because we're nerds.
But hey, who can laugh about cat poop? Come on, life's good.
There you go. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for listening.
All right. Good night, everybody. Talk to you next time.